Welcome to Stranger Still,
a podcast where we answer questions.
We sure do. I'm Nick Wood.
I'm Jonathan Beegan.
How you doing, John?
Pretty good.
Yeah?
No, but come on. We gotta have lifted spirits for this.
Yeah, we gotta at least pretend, because deep down inside I'm seething and pissed off that we even in the year 2019 have to have this conversation.
Right.
Like, once we get past this, I know people just don't want to hear it anymore, but we can't not address the elephant in the room, right?
The elephant in the room. The Republicans, right? Is that what you're going to say? Republicans?
The white nationalists. Well, I want to talk about George Floyd and the protests going on right now. And I'm going to summarize my thoughts by telling a story about overhearing my dad talking to his neighbor about the current events and saying, he said something like, well, I don't think that there's a single person out there that doesn't think what happened to George Floyd was wrong. And I get where he's coming from, and this isn't a knock on my dad, but the problem is that there is a section of people that don't think what happened was wrong or don't care enough to realize that there's a problem going on in our nation.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to say it's all cops. Of course, I'm not saying that. But there are some cops out there that don't think that this is a problem. And it can come because they are in a role that gives them a sense of power, and they think that they're above everyone else. But you know what, John?
What, Nicholas?
They aren't.
Oh, wow. Brave New World.
Yeah, I know. This is a hot take, but we just need to stop treating people like lesser. And
well, don't get ahead of yourself.
I know.
Are you all people?
Well, there are some people, like cops that kill people, that we should treat like lesser.
There you go. Thank you.
But I will say, I don't think that I think that the protests that are going on right now are incredibly important. But what sucks is there are people out there, they could be cops, they could be white nationalists, they could be whoever, out there inciting violence.
I pick A and B, but you go on.
Well, I want to leave the window open so that white nationalists and cops don't come after us. But they're out there lighting buildings on fire, looting, whatever, these opportunists that are detracting from the message. And there's a lot of things great going on in the world right now. Like, I don't care about your views about Elon Musk, but we sent people to space. But we can't talk about that because people don't understand how to treat each other.
Yeah.
And that pisses me off, John.
Yeah. I mean, I watched the live stream and with no joy.
Right. Because
you're dead.
Yeah. Well, I say all that to say, I feel like a lot of the things that we're going to talk about today are honestly no-brainers, but sometimes it's important to remember how we got to where we are, the important moments in our history that led to change, and compare them to what's going on today. Because what's frightening is, you hear all this stuff in history class, but until I was researching, I never realized there were so many parallels between what happened in 1773 that's still going on in the year of our Lord 2019.
Right. Yeah, I think that history is just going to repeat itself over and over, and we're going to find a lot of those similarities. I'm hoping that we've evolved a little bit, but I wouldn't be surprised. Like, it's just so disappointing.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that's just how people are and how they will continue to be. But it's a lot of it comes from like centrist apathy.
A lot of it comes
like,
from
people just don't get it, so like it doesn't affect me.
Yeah,
so I don't care.
That's exactly what it is. And the other half
I call
of
it centrist apathy or privilege apathy.
Yeah,
but go on.
But the other half of it is there's just people with an overwhelming sense of power, whether they've earned it or not. I shouldn't even say that. Whether their role. No, you know what? No one in these stories has the power that they think they have. I don't know what I'm trying to say. But
well, I'd like to just get your back even further and push that further left to say no one earns $1 billion. No one.
Yeah. Earns. Crushing a million other people.
You have to. Yeah. Those workers kind of helped you a little bit, don't you think?
Yeah, just a little bit. But if you don't agree with our views, sorry, that's what we're doing this week. If this episode's boring, I'm sorry. This is what we're doing this week because it's important.
Yeah. Flophouse is fun. You could check them out.
Yeah.
I've listened to all their episodes like five times over.
Yeah, go check out another podcast. This one's not for you. Part of the problem with this episode, though, is there, and this is another no-brainer, there's just too many important protests that we could spend an entire episode on. All of these could have their own episode. I narrowed it down to four. I didn't get to get, like, I wanted to talk about the French Revolution, the Haitian Revolution, and women's suffrage and stuff. But we'll be here all day. And we can cover them later. There's
those could get their own episodes.
Yeah. And there are, this is our normal disclaimer. There are some horrible things that happen to people. So any jokes that we make aren't at the expense of the people that suffered, but more of,
making sure that you're not in a complete death spiral into depression.
Yeah. I was going to say conveying our nervous laughter, so that we don't go crazy, but yeah, that works too. But yeah. we got another medley episode on our hands, John.
Am I supposed to sing like a medley?
Yes, please.
Okay.
It's got to be the entirety of Abbey Road.
That's like, I don't care about that.
Okay. Well, the first song on that track or on that album is my least favorite. So it starts off bad, but it gets better. No one disagrees with that opinion. Or no one agrees with that opinion. John, the Boston Tea Party, you've heard of it.
I've heard of it. I've been to Boston. I've drank tea. I've been to a party.
Wow. You're like an expert. Yeah. So tell us what happened.
Right. They threw a bunch of chests in the ocean.
Yeah.
The harbor.
Into the harbor.
Habba. Yeah. I guess I could, if I just, all you gotta do is say ka, and you start talking like you're in Boston instead of New York.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
that's it.
It's easy.
Yeah.
Just like that. So on, for those that don't know, on December 6th, 1773, 100 or so Sons of Liberty dressed as Native Americans climbed aboard three ships and dumped 342 chests of tea into Griffin's Wharf in Boston. But John, why did they do that if you're such an expert?
They wanted to drink the world's largest tea and break the Guinness World Record.
You know, I wonder if Guinness was making
it was
world
too
records.
Salty, ew. Yuck.
Yeah, salty tea. Maybe this will make me look stupid, but I had it in my mind. And after I did my research, I realized I was an idiot and I had just forgot a lot of things. But I always thought the British government tried taxing the crap out of colonials' tea, among other things. But the tea was what broke the straw that broke the camel's back. And so they, as a form of protest, they dumped 45 tons or somewhere between $1 million and $2 million worth of tea into the ocean. And the fish were hopped up on caffeine that day.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, and antioxidants.
And they lived forever. They're still alive.
Yeah. Good. Let's start conspiracy theories.
Yeah. And one of them is in office. It took him about 3 hours to do, but I had this a little bit backwards. There were several events that led up to this. In 1765, the British government imposed the Stamp Act, which taxed almost all printed paper products, like playing cards and stamps and stuff. 2 years later, they imposed the Townshend Act, which taxed more essentials like just paper in general, glass, and tea. And this is where you start to hear no taxation without representation, the old adage, whatever you want to call it. And after 3 years of outcry from the colonials, they rolled back all of the taxes except for the tax on tea. So to fight back, they began importing Dutch tea. And this was done basically to stop supporting the patriarchy, but it was also cheaper because it didn't have the export taxes. Also during this time, in 1770, on March 5th, there were a few colonialists in Boston that were frustrated with the British presence in their streets. So they picked a fight with them, with the British soldiers, by throwing snowballs at them, which to me seems innocent enough, right?
Yeah, I'm kind of worried about what they threw back, Nicholas.
Well, the British militia reacted by bringing in more soldiers, opening fire on the colonialists, and injured 6 people and killed 5. Sound familiar at all?
Almost like throwing water bottles at people, and then they fire back rubber bullets and snipe them from buildings?
Yeah, or like opening an umbrella and then shooting them with tear gas and flash grenades. Almost like that, yeah. So this obviously sparked unrest in the colonies, and ever since the colonies started importing Dutch tea, the East India Company started losing tons of money. That was like their chief export, and they were about to go bankrupt. So the British government stepped in by instituting the Tea Act of 1773, and this allowed the East India Company to export tea to the colonies without being taxed. All of a sudden, this turns them into a monopoly on tea, and actually ended up making this tea cheaper than the Dutch tea that they were bringing in. So the Dutch tea could no longer compete because the British government was like, you're good. You don't have to pay taxes. So people like Samuel Adams and John Hancock didn't like that the government halfway across the globe was setting up monopolies just to screw over the colonies and flex this taxation muscle just on a whim. So they organized the Sons of Liberty and the famous Boston Tea Party. This kicked off many events that obviously led to the American Revolution. But what I thought was interesting, this is something I didn't learn in history class, is that a lot of our founding fathers were kind of pissed off at the time. Like George Washington had land or stakes or stock in some of these companies. So he was pissed that all this tea was thrown into the ocean. But he did say, the cause of Boston, you have to say it like a...
Oh yeah, say it like him.
The cause of Boston ever will be considered as the cause of America. So even though he hated it, he's like, yeah, this is how we're going to progress as a country. Ben Franklin was mad at
that.
That
doesn't happen anymore.
I know.
When's the last time you heard Mitch McConnell say that?
That's a good point. So I think that puts a lot of perspective in things. Back in the day, even if they didn't like it, they knew what was right.
It negatively affected them personally. Mm-hmm. They're like, this is for the greater good.
Yeah.
Because I'm not a selfish jerk yet.
Yeah. Yet? As well, America?
Yeah. Right. No, we were selfish jerks then too. Mm-hmm. But specific politicians.
Or
Mitch McConnell.
Isles. Yeah. So as if England didn't learn their lesson, they... strike again. You've heard of Gandhi, yes?
I've heard of Gandhi. A little bit salty.
Yeah, I know that you...
About how I feel about him.
Yeah, he's got a shadowy past, but maybe that's a complete... I think that would actually make a really good episode to talk about Gandhi's personal life. But did you know that he really likes salt?
That guy loved salt. There's anything
putting
about
it on
that
anything.
Guy, he would just shred it up. He'd get one of those rock grinders and just salt it up.
Yeah, and he had really high blood pressure. I feel like that's really dismissive of what he did, but it's still funny. So as we go through these, all of these events, I feel like anyone can say, oh, well, those happened a long time ago. Things have changed now. That's not how the way the world works. And I feel like maybe I should have brought this up at the beginning of the episode. This is one of those moments where, as an adult, I wish that I had paid attention to dates in history class. Not specific dates, but at least, like, years. Because I didn't realize how recent these events were. Like, England had control of India until 1947. That feels way too recent for colonies. But here we are. That was
and a lot of the
6
time
years
it's
ago.
Like, I probably voiced this before, where I feel frustrated, like we're stuck in the present, and the present feels like the past because of what we perceive the world to be, and then what the actuality is has to catch up to that.
Yeah.
So it's like, why the hell are we still talking about some of the stuff that we aren't talking about? But
yeah,
I digress.
I know. So England, being the force that they were back in the day, they went over to India, colonized it, and began treating it basically how they treated America, which was horribly. In 1882, just 99 years after the Boston Tea Party, England instituted a salt tax on India. I don't know how they didn't learn their lesson the first time, but this made it illegal for Indians to collect or sell salt, meaning all of the salt that they wanted, which was heavily in demand, had to come from Britain and was expensive and heavily taxed.
Could you imagine if America did that? Can you imagine if we... All right, just picture this. I want you to close your eyes for a second, Nick. Mm-hmm.
Imagine we go
into another country and we use their resources for our profit. Could you imagine if we did that?
Yeah, go listen to last week's episode.
Oh, great.
So in comes Gandhi. He spent years in South Africa fighting for Indian civil rights in South Africa. In 1915, he moved back to India and began fighting for civil rights in his homeland. And in 1930, Gandhi had an idea. He said, verbatim, I'm going to fight that salt tax. In English and everything. No, I'm just kidding. So he came up with this idea that he would conduct a march, defy British government, and eventually start a revolution. And he let authorities know 10 days in advance via letter that he was going to conduct this peaceful march. He had like a couple dozen people with him at the start. And it started on March 12th, 1930. He took just a handful of people. And over the next half a month, marched 240 miles down to the Arabian Sea in Dandi. And the plan was when they got there, there usually high tide would come in and leave a bunch of salt deposits on the beach. So he was going to go there, grab one of the salt deposits, collect it, which is illegal, and defy British rule. And he let the authorities know. They showed up. They destroyed all the salt deposits by smashing it into the mud. But Gandhi reached down anyway into the mud, grabbed some salt out of it, and said, "With this, I'm shaking the foundations of the British Empire." And the people with him, by this point, he had gathered thousands of people, tens of thousands of followers in this march. And they followed suit on the beach, grabbed up some salt, which again was illegal. And across India, millions of people started doing the same thing. And over the course of the next month, 60,000 people were arrested for this incredibly peaceful protest of picking up salt. Gandhi was arrested himself, and it also led to the deaths of 250 people. Sound familiar?
Sounds just exhausting.
Yeah. I don't know if I said this. It led to the arrests of 60,000 people. 60,000 people were arrested for this peaceful protest. A year later, Gandhi was released from jail, but it didn't immediately result in the freedom of India. But it did, from my perception, start off a chain of events that led to the independence of India in 1947. 1947, John. Isn't that crazy? Yeah,
that's not that long ago at all.
Britain had control over India until after World War II had ended.
Yeah.
That's bonkers.
Like, a lot of people we know were alive and around.
Yeah. Believe it or not, John, speaking of World War II,
You just call me Sean John?
Sean John, the leprechaun. Okay. I just slurred my speech because I'm tired.
And a rapper.
Yeah. Did you know that World War II shook the world? Can you believe that?
I don't know where you're going with this, but yeah, it was terrible. What happened, Nicholas?
Well, back in America, it had an important role in kind of starting the civil rights movement in America. And I know that this isn't the catalyst for the events, but I didn't know this. Again, maybe I'm making myself look like an idiot, but I think it's important to admit when you don't know things. This is like one of those things in American history that they just don't tell you in history class because whatever.
We should go back and just like dress up as high schoolers and try to take a history class and see if it's changed.
Yeah. So
I have a backpack. You have a backpack? That's all it takes.
I do.
Okay.
I probably have some textbooks.
Dude, just bring your Tamagotchi and we'll, how do you do fellow kids? And we'll be in.
So I guess this isn't like the catalyst. There's a lot of events that led up to the American Civil Rights Movement in the 60s, like in the 14th Amendment that made African Americans equal to everyone else, the 15th Amendment that allowed them to vote. And some Americans didn't like this, and I'm not going to specify a region, but if I did, it'd be toward
that's the bottom half,
toward the Gulf of Mexico.
So like not the north half or the east or west half.
Yeah. And this is where you get things like Jim Crow laws and you get half a century of segregation.
The bottom half of century of segregation.
Yeah. The southern half.
If you had to pick a half.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So back to World War II. And I don't think I necessarily knew this, but African Americans weren't necessarily allowed to enlist in the military, in the army. They were discouraged from doing so. And as World War II was going on, a lot of jobs were returning. The economy was getting better because there was a lot of efforts to support the army. But a lot of the jobs went to white people. And as a result, there was a movement to march on Washington. So Franklin Roosevelt issued an executive order that opened up better jobs to everyone, age, sex, creed, race, whatever. Everyone got an equal chance at a job. And this was one of the early movements toward equality. And that was 1941. But it wasn't until 1954 that the Brown versus Board of Education finally made it illegal to segregate in schools. And then you have in 1955, a year later, Rosa Parks famously kicked off the Montgomery bus boycott that went on for more than a year. Even then, it wasn't 2 years later until the Little Rock Nine finally made it into a white school, making history. But in a situation like that, the National Guard had to defend these children. There's nine children going to a white school, and the National Guard had to step in so that grown-ass adults didn't throw rocks at them.
Now, speaking of grown-ass adults, let me just bring everybody down a little bit and depress you. I know we were going to talk about the protests just a little bit at the beginning, and then kind of go with uplifting, but as long as we're going to touch on some negative things and how history repeats itself, I can't tell you how many images I saw yesterday that disgusted me, but one amongst them was, did you see the little girl that got maced by the full-grown-ass man in the face? She was like 10.
Great.
And he refused to show his badge.
Well, I'm sure he's a real great guy. Luckily, we have access to that information these days. There were several other peaceful protests that occurred over the next few years, like the Freedom Riders. They had their bus set on fire. There was a sit-in in Greensboro, North Carolina, where peaceful protesters were sitting in a diner, and they were arrested. Until finally, August 18th, 1963, Martin Luther King Jr. led the March on Washington. 200,000 people showed up, which is incredible. Probably more than showed up to Trump's inauguration, but who am I to say? And it was another peaceful protest that led to the Civil Rights Act in 1964. And unfortunately, that didn't solve all the problems, though. In 1965, a year later, 600 people marched from Selma to Montgomery to protest unequal voting rights. There's a lot of things that are still going on today, like voter poll purging and making voting inaccessible and all that stuff. And one of the protesters, Jimmie Lee Jackson, was killed by, drumroll, a white police officer. I know that's not uplifting.
Yeah, I don't want to put a symbol crash after that.
But what I think is interesting is that after Martin Luther King Jr.'s assassinations, the streets were filled with riots and looting. Sound familiar, John?
Now, hold on a second.
Yeah.
Because I'm seeing Martin Luther King all over the place.
And yeah.
One of the big, most controversial things are people are saying never once was violent, never once like stood up for looting and anything like that. But it's hard to ignore that he had a violent end.
That wasn't him, though. That was people after he was assassinated.
So that's how he was treated when he was peacefully protesting. Another thing that's maybe repeating itself.
Yeah.
Peaceful protesters being antagonized by police.
Yeah, I mentioned my stance on the looting. I don't think that it's necessarily the protesters. But people love the reason. This is why I wanted to do this episode, because people love to look back on the past and say, well, look at all these peaceful protests and the changes that came from those. Well, a lot of those peaceful protests ended up with police opening fire on crowds and killing mass amounts of people.
And not only that, but I've never thought that the word whitewash is more appropriate than when it applies to Martin Luther King Jr.
Yeah. How so?
I just think white people really like to say, oh, this is what he stood for.
Yeah.
And a lot, he was like really far left.
Yeah.
Like he was like, we should do a whole episode on him.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah. People shouldn't be saying this is what he stood for. Not only because like I'm white, but also I wasn't alive. I didn't talk to him.
Well, what's funny to me is there's a tweet thread where Martin Luther King Jr.'s son said like, my father would have stand in solidarity with Black Lives Matter and all that. And there's all these white people replying saying, yeah, you got it wrong. Your dad actually didn't believe in this. And here's what I think he believed in. And they're like a billion supplies. Like, good luck, man.
Yeah.
Good luck.
The last one I want to talk about, and this is kind of a downer, is Tiananmen Square. And tomorrow, after the day after this episode comes out, if you're listening to it, is the 31st anniversary of Tiananmen Square, the Tiananmen Square massacre. And this is heartbreaking for many reasons, and I hate ending on such a dour note, but part of the reason that I wanted to include this one is because many people look at the protests still going on in China and Hong Kong and say, well, we can't allow that to happen in America. But let's just walk through what happened at Tiananmen Square, John. The year is 1989, and this is a time in the world where a lot of the communist ideas and countries are starting to be figuratively and literally torn down. And many of the younger educated population in China saw this happening around the world and said, hey, we want more democracy. We want to be able to be a part of political decisions, and we want better education for our country. Is that too much to ask? And a lot of these people were still students at the time. So to demonstrate this, they were performing marches and hunger strikes all over China, and China didn't like this, eventually launching martial law in Beijing. And over the course of May that year, 1 million people had come to Beijing to march and protest, saying, hey, we want democracy. And on June 4th, the military came in to Tiananmen Square, started opening fire on the crowd, ended with the deaths of thousands of people and the arrests of about 10,000 people. On June 5th, they started bringing in tanks to fight the protesters. A little bit of overkill, but that's where you get that famous picture of the lone man standing in the way of the tanks. And protests are still going on every year on June 4th and 5th, because 30 years later, 31 years later, this is still a problem.
Yeah.
They still don't have democracy. Any of that sound familiar, John?
Yeah, maybe passing it down by generation. And at that point, I mean, even in the civil rights movement, there are people that are part of Black Lives Matter that are out there today that were fighting, and their parents and grandparents were involved previously. Like, it's just nuts. But the fact that it lasts for this long, I actually have something that's a little bit hopeful towards the end here. That's like a fun, easy, light story about the protester dog that was famous.
Yeah.
But I followed up on that, the history of that, and that's something that's still going on too. Like, some of these things don't end, or they're still in progress, but it's brutal.
Yeah.
It takes a long wait, patience, and it's a strong fight. Like, I thought, like, and I don't want to digress too much, but I lost all my hope with politics when Bernie dropped. Like, I really thought that he awakened a big group of people to actually fight for working class and unions, and help awaken people to a class war that I think is important and necessary in our country. And when I say class war, I don't mean violence, but there needs to be people that stand up legally and politically and emotionally to the structure that we have in our capitalist country. Yeah. And I'm hoping that that continues. But that loss of Bernie, it just made me realize, okay, we weren't as strong as we thought we were as a left unified, like even globally. But it's going to take a long time and a lot of patience, and that's where we are.
Yeah. And if you ever need a prime example of how incrementalism doesn't work, take a look at this episode. The things that happened in 1773 are still going on today because no one's willing to make any change. Incrementalism is a myth. That's never
you
happen.
Need strong radical change. Like, this is done. We demand it's done. Let's get it done.
Yeah. I will say, you brought up like the signs and all the protesters and stuff. I do like this is a weird sentence, but I like seeing a lot of the signs that people are making. They got some really good messages on them. And I can't think, as soon as I say that, all of them leave my mind.
I saw some really cool old school 60s Black Lives Matter signs, which are really, really cool to see.
Well, I saw a lot of people that were like, I fought this back in 1963 and I have to fight it again, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Or obviously this one speaks to us. Like, I understand that I will never understand, but I still stand.
Yeah.
Stuff like that is impactful.
And before we go on to like more uplifting stuff, I just want one more dark thing to kind of touch on a little bit. And this is my opinion. I haven't brought this up to you, so I don't know how you feel about it.
Yeah.
But did you see that there were some police that, and I got my mind totally changed on this. I felt one way, and then I learned more, and I felt a different way.
Yeah.
With specifically regarding the George Floyd protest.
Yeah.
Did you see that some police were kneeling and saying, "Let's join in," and putting their badges down and stuff like that?
Mm-hmm.
Originally, I thought like, that's really good. Like, I'm glad that they're trying to say, we respect your rights and we want to be a part of this. But then I realized that it's not their fight. And beyond that, for them to ignite, like in uniform, say, let's make this a parade. That was one of the quotes from an officer in Flint.
Yeah.
It's not a parade. It's not a celebration. This is something where, I mean, as far as this specifically, it's a Black Lives Matter movement. It's not our decision to make. So when I'm going to, like, there's a peaceful protest this weekend in Cedar Rapids on Saturday.
Yeah.
And one of the hard, strict rules is if you are an ally, like a white ally, you do not participate in chants. So when they say whose streets, our streets, if you're white, you don't say our streets, if you're black, right? And then the other was don't engage with the officers. if the officers want to take their badges off and go out in plain clothes as civilians and stand alongside you and help out, that's one thing. But it's kind of like an abusive boyfriend that gives you flowers.
Yeah.
For them to acknowledge, like, you know what, we're with you, is kind of like almost saying all lives matter, because they're kind of washing over the fact that there is a systematic problem. And I don't know. I thought that was very interesting to think about from that perspective.
It's very nuanced, I think. I don't think that that's black or white. I think what is definitive is that some change needs to happen. There, if you go to a protest, there's several cool guides. And they're not cool guys because they shouldn't have to exist, but... the ACLA, is that what they're called, have put out many documents saying these are your rights during a protest, and if you're approached by an officer who wants to arrest you, this is what you say and do. So if you're going to go to a protest, err on the side of caution and read through those.
Am I free to go? And it's yes or no.
Yeah.
If they say no, say, am I being detained?
Yeah.
If you are, they can pat you down. They cannot open any concealed containers or open anything up. But do not resist arrest, even if they do break the rules there, because they probably will. Because then they could hold that against you and say you're resisting. And if you're white, you're good. If you're black, well, good luck.
Yeah.
That's how our world works.
It is, unfortunately. The one thing that you wanted to talk about was to be a little bit uplifting was organization, because we should feel incredibly empowered in the age of technology to enact change. Back in the day, they obviously didn't have this. They had pigeons and letters. I think that it's interesting to look back on how some of these were conducted. Like the civil rights movement, a lot of that was just performed. A lot of that planning was done in living rooms in secret late at night. They'd go to people's houses and discuss,
like, Tupperware parties.
Basically, I know you're joking, but basically, I could be getting this wrong, but I think Gandhi just had a few followers. I know his march started off with just a few dozen people.
Yeah, and now look at him—he's got over a million followers, dude.
Yeah,
he's got
Instagram.
Blue check.
But from my understanding, he had tens of thousands of people following by the end of that march, and then the media picked it up. And as soon as the media picked it up, it spread like wildfire across India. Millions of people were defying British rule. But the most interesting one is, it doesn't matter how small and powerless you feel, like the March on Bastille during the French Revolution, it was a completely powerless group. They had no money. They were under the thumb of French rule, and they met on a tennis court. They did their planning of the march on a tennis court, because that's the only place that they could meet up. So it doesn't matter how small or powerless you feel, we can make change, and we're going to do it, damn it. What was your other thing you had about a dog?
Yeah, this is great, man. I saw an uplifting story that was in direct regards to what's going on. I found this Twitter thread. This guy I follow named Respectable Lawyer. Respectable Law is his name, his handle on Twitter. If you go to my John Vegan Twitter, you'll see the thread that I retweeted.
Yeah.
But I'm just basically going to read this whole thing.
Okay.
It's so fun.
Yeah.
And it's so cute. But there's this little dog, and his name is El Negro Matapacos, right? Which means El Negro is the black, because he's a black dog.
Mm-hmm.
And Matapacos is cop killer. Right? And I'm just going to read this. There's nothing else to say. During this time of protest, I know we could all use an uplifting story. So I want to tell you about El Negro Matapacos, the heroic Chilean police protest dog who hated the police. El Negro Matapacos, black cop killer, was a stray dog who began showing up to support Chilean student protesters in 2011. Aww. He gained fame for never hurting a civilian, but always turned aggressive against the police. You got to see the pictures to go with them.
Yeah,
he was fiercely protective of the protesters, and he would accompany them into the thick of danger. And there's pictures of them with a Molotov cocktail throwing it at like a tank, and he's just by their side, this little doggy. El Negro was always on the front lines. There's a water truck that's spraying huddled protesters holding riot shields, and the dog is just like behind them, like keeping them safe. He hated the water cannons, but he also never retreated. He barked and thrashed and gnashed his teeth because he was brave.
Oh man, he's a mean looking pup.
He gave absolutely zero Fs.
Yeah.
Here he is making love to his lady friends in front of the cops painted splatter tanks.
Good for him.
And he always was there to back up his friends. Oh boy. Yeah, there's a guy on fire and he's just there like
smiling. He's got a bunch of fan art. That's awesome.
Yeah, he understood solidarity. He understood who the violent thugs were, and he was just a dog.
Yeah.
And he never gave the cops a moment's peace. And even when the protests are over, there's cops just walking down the street and he's trying to bite their faces off. El Negro Matapacos has become beloved. Beloved is probably too weak of a word. El Negro is approaching canonization. And then there's a lot of fan art. They have parades. They made a big giant version of him that they've paraded through the streets in Chile. And this is all because of student protests. There are too many students and not enough schools.
Yeah.
And this is my example of them, something they're still fighting. This is all in 2011. The last I saw the update was 2015. Here's an entire page of tribute art, matapacos.cl for Chile.
Mm-hmm.
Move over, big structural daily. I don't know what that's referring to, but there's a giant, they're just creating a big giant
blow up dog
version.
Yeah,
down the streets. It's just really fun. And they used to draw him next to this guy named Pear Man, and Pear, I guess, means stop.
Yeah,
and he would just hold a stop sign and go down the street. Yep. But he was just a great little pup. He was probably just scared of the riot gear, but he knew, like, he became a symbol. And I thought it was just a cute story. And mm-hmm. if you follow that thread, it's just so sweet. I'll post it in our Facebook group.
Yeah, awesome.
And he was okay. He never got hurt. He died of old age. And yeah.
What a good note to end on.
Mm-hmm.
Should we take a quick break? And then I have, after the break, I have just a quick plug that I want to give everybody. You probably don't want to hear a plug, but that's what's coming after the break, and you should listen. So we'll be right back. You know what? Thank you, everybody, for sticking with us as we're at home doing this. I know John's dogs were barking in the background, but we did get a visitor. I don't know that I've talked about this on a previous episode, but we were visited by my amazing cat Daisy. She came and stepped on my keyboard. I don't know if it'll come through on the episode, but
she definitely rubbed her tail in your eyeballs.
Yeah,
like on your iris.
I saw it on your face, and she shows up when I have meetings at work, and my boss was like, I love it when your cat just like climbs up on your shoulder and you don't bat an eye. You just keep going with whatever the hell you're saying. that's what I did here. But she's snoozing on my other office chair. I accidentally locked her in here. She's an amazing cat and I love her so much.
It's so good to see, like, I've seen you become a dad, but seeing you get a cat is like seeing you become a dad all over again.
Yeah. Someone, one of the listeners of our podcast, who's also my friend Hannah, was like, I've never seen Nick use social media so much as when he got a cat.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah. So you can go to my Instagram, plug that, because that's where I post a lot of these. that's not the plug I was going to make. The plug I was going to make is that our amazing friend Ryan Lynch has a band called Premium Heart. And if you know Ryan Lynch, he's maybe one of the greatest people that we know.
I would call his heart premium. Absolutely.
Absolutely. His band just put out a single. A few months ago, they went to the studio to record an album, their first album. And I'll just read what they put on their Facebook page. He said, while watching everything going on in Minneapolis and Louisville and many other places after the murders of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor over the last few days, we decided to release our first single, The Credit Reel, on Bandcamp for pay any price, and 100% of the money is going to be split between Black Table Arts and the Louisville Community Bail Fund. These organizations are doing important work helping people in the communities most affected, like in Minneapolis and Louisville, and need our help now more than ever. Please consider supporting them any way you can, whether through us or not. So if you're out there in, say, Iowa, and you feel completely powerless, you can support some very important organizations and get a very good song out of it. I was reading about, like, incentivized donations the other day, because there's always those companies that are like, 100% of the proceeds go to blah blah blah, so buy your freaking toothbrush or whatever. but they never tell you how much money is those proceeds. All of any amount of money that you give for this song will go towards these organizations, which is an easy way to get money donated where it needs to be if you don't know where or how to donate to organizations. You can go to premiumheart.bandcamp.com to donate. I did, and you should too. I shouldn't even say donate. You should go there to buy this amazing track for however much money you think is worth it. And I don't know. That's all I got.
No, I like that. You set that up so perfectly, and you wrapped up in a bow, and it had an important message to it. And then you set yourself up to add an additional sentence when you didn't have one there.
Yeah. I didn't think about it. This is, yeah, I don't know.
It's like you finish a beautiful speech and then say, and also...
I'm done.
No, that's, yeah.
That's, okay, this is a totally stupid tangent, but I've been watching The Great on Hulu. It's a great show. Also kind of poignant right now, considering the events going on. It's a comedy about Catherine the Great. And there's this ad for ABC News on Hulu, and one of the hosts starts off really strong, and she's like, there's news coming to Hulu, and that news is ABC News. It's like she had a really great point to make and then realized that she was saying the same thing twice, but they used that take for some reason. It makes me laugh every time that ad comes on.
So, there's something stranger still. It's stranger still.
The podcast.
Good. Well, premiumheart.bandcamp.com.
Yeah.
Guys and gals.
Yeah.
And all people.
All people.
Give you money.
Yeah. Give them money.
Up.
All right. We got to end this before I just fall asleep.
All right.
Thank you guys for sticking around.
I'm still Nick.
I'm still... Whoa, that screwed me up.
I'm still John.
I'm still Nick.
This is Stranger Still.